ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Chapter 7, text 1 to 3. We'll read the first text.
Shri Shuka Uvacha Te Nagaraja Mamantrya Phala Bhagena Vasukim Pariviya Girau Tasmin नेत्रम अब्धिम मुदान्वितः आरे भीरे सुरायत्ता अमृतार्थे कुरुद्वः।
ट्रांसलेशन बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। सुखदेव गोस्वामी सेड, ओ बेस्ट ऑफ द कुरुस महाराज परीक्षित, द डेमीगॉड्स एंड डिमन्स समन्ड बाय वासुकी, king of the servants, requesting him to come and promising to give him a share of the nectar. They coiled Vasuki around Mandara mountain as a churning rope, and with great pleasure they endeavored to produce nectar by churning the ocean of milk. So there is no purport to this. We'll read the translation. The personality of Godhead Ajita grasped the front portion of the snake, and then the demigods followed. The next verse has translation in purport. We'll read the translation. The leaders of the demons thought it unwise to hold the tail, the inauspicious portion of the snake. Instead, they wanted to hold the front, which had been taken by the personality of a godhead and the demigods, because that portion was auspicious and glorious. Thus the demons, on the plea that they were all highly advanced students of Vedic knowledge and were all famous for their birth and activities, protested that they wanted to hold the front of the snake. Purport. The demons thought that the front of the snake was auspicious and that catching hold of that portion would be more chivalrous. Moreover, daityas must always do the opposite of the demigod. That is their nature. We have actually seen this in relation to our Krishna consciousness movement. We are advocating cow protection and encouraging people to drink more milk and eat palatable preparations made of milk. But the demons, just to protest such proposals, are claiming that they are advanced in scientific knowledge. As described here by the words Swadhyaya Shruta Sampannaha, they say that according to their scientific way, they have discovered that milk is dangerous and that the beef obtained by killing cows is very nutritious. This difference of opinion will always continue. Indeed, it has existed since days of yore. Millions of years ago, there was the same competition. The demons, as a result of their so-called Vedic study, preferred to hold the side of the snake near the mouth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it wise to catch hold of the dangerous part of the snake and allow the demons to hold the tail, which was not dangerous. But because of a competitive desire, the demons thought it wise to hold the snake near the mouth. If the demigods were going to drink poison, the demons would resolve, why should we not share the poison and die gloriously by drinking it? In regard to the words Swadhyaya Shruta Sampannaha Prakhyata Prakhyata Janma Karma Bhi, another question may be raised. If one is actually educated in Vedic knowledge, is famous for performing prescribed activities, and has been born in a great aristocratic family, why should he be called a demon? The answer is that one may be highly educated and may have been born in an aristocratic family, but if he is godless, if he does not listen to the instructions of God, then he is a demon. There are many examples in history of men like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana and Kamsa, who were all well educated, who were born in aristocratic families and who were very powerful and chivalrous in fighting, but who, because of deriding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were called Rakshasas or demons. Or maybe very well educated, but if he has no sense of Krishna consciousness, no obedience to the Supreme Lord, he is a demon. That is described by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 7.15. Namam duskriti no muda prapadyante naradhamaha mayaya aparhuta jnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among the mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of the demons, do not surrender unto me. Asuram Bhavam refers to not accepting the existence of God or the transcendental instructions of the personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Gita clearly consists of transcendental instructions imparted directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But asuras, instead of accepting these instructions directly, make commentaries according to their own whimsical ways and mislead everyone without profit even for themselves. One should therefore be very careful of demoniac godless persons. According to the words of Lord Krishna, even if a godless demon is very well educated, he must be considered a mudha, naradhama, and maya aparhuta jnana.
Om adjnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmay shri gurave namaha.
At the very outset, I would like to crave the blessings of very, very wonderful and senior Vaishnava sitting here in the audience. I am unfit actually to talk on this subject in present of such exalted devotees. In the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna makes a request to the Supreme Lord Krishna. He says, Vistarena Atmano Yogam Vibhutim cha janardhana bhuyaya katah struptir hi shunmato nasti mi amrutam. He says, O Janardhan, again please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I am never satiated in hearing about you, for the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. So in response to this very wonderful request by Arjun, the Supreme Lord Krishna then goes on to describe some of his prominent opulences. This is spread over 22 verses in the 10th chapter. And then he concludes by saying, Nāntaha asti mama divyānām vibhūtinnanya parantapa eshaha tu uddeshataha prokta vibhūte vistaramayah. He says, O mighty conqueror of the enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. In other words, we understand from this that the opulences of the Lord are unlimited. There is no limit to the Lord's opulences, and there is no limit to the wonderful pastimes of the Supreme Lord. For this reason, this Amrut Manthan pastime, the churning of the ocean of milk for getting nectar, which is described in several chapters preceding and later on also to come, is one of the most enchanting as well as instructive. Because this, for me personally, this is very, very fascinating for reasons that I'll be specifying a little later. So there is no doubt, if anyone who hears the pastimes of this Amrut Manthan, there should be no doubt in such a person's mind that Krishna is indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Supreme Controller and he is the most powerful person besides being Karuna Sindhu, an ocean of mercy. In my present phase of life, I am a retired person. I do not look out for advertisements for jobs. That position has changed long ago. But if and when I sometimes go through the newspapers, then I find that many times there is an advertisement in which they ask for a person with ability for multitasking. Have you heard of it? Most of you must have heard this. Multitasking. That means a person should be capable of handling many, many things simultaneously, and you should be do it competently. Such a person gets a very, very lucrative job offer, high emoluments, perquisites, etc. Now, the Supreme Lord is Sarvakarana Karanam, and he indeed is the source of the highest form of multitasking that you can think of. And this Amrut Manthan pastime is a wonderful example of the Lord's multitasking abilities. So, what does the Lord not do in this beautiful Amrut Manthan pastime? And in the process of doing this multitasking, He shows His divine compassion to His devotees, the demigods, who in a helpless situation have taken shelter of the Lord. And He just doesn't give His mercy immediately, He makes them work for it. It's also a very beautiful lesson in this. So many roles are played by the Lord. And all these roles are played to perfection. There is no flaw anywhere. And sometimes when I think of multitasking, my admiration for mothers grows a lot. Mothers do a lot of multitasking. Now, and our Supreme, Param Guru, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, was also an expert at multitasking. We see that. I'd like to cite two examples of his multitasking. There are many, but only two. First of all, the Back to Godhead magazine. He wrote the articles himself. He went and purchased the paper for printing. He would go to the printing press, hold discussions with the authorities of the printing press. Then, when the actual matter was printed, he would go through the proofs himself, correct them, galley proofs, and then again, see that the print is proper. Then after the magazines were bound, I don't know whether he was binding them himself, possibly yes, then those magazines he would go and distribute himself. What more glorious example of multitasking can be there? Very wonderful example. Then we also know how during the initial phases of his stay in the US, when he initially went there, how he would do everything for disciples, his disciples. He would give classes, wonderful classes on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. He would cook for them. Then, after cooking, he would serve prasad to them. And then, he would do the menial service of, washing all the dishes. So much multitasking, but all based on compassion. So, everything that the Lord does and everything that the Lord's pure devotees do is based on compassion. So, Amrut Manthan, why is it such an extraordinary pastime? So, in this pastime, not only does the Lord incarnate, in several incarnations, we have the incarnation of Ajit, which we have just now read, then Kurma, then Mohini Murti. And all this He does simply to serve His devotees, the demigods. And Amrut Manthan is a story of inspiration for those who are depressed. The demigods are in depression. So, he doesn't prescribe them a Valium or anything like that. He gives them, hope. He gives them something to look forward to. They are in a very pitiable condition, but the Lord, gives them something to do, something to look forward to, and gives them inspiration. So, He gives them motivation, an action-oriented motivation, not just motivate. It's one thing to, motivate somebody, but to get them to act, that is something different. So, again, there are several reasons why the pastime is attractive. I would like to cite a few, others may think of more. So, first of all, in this pastime, there is glorification of Lord Shiva, which is the title of the present chapter, Lord Shiva Saves the Universe. Glorification of the devotee of the Supreme Lord, and how Lord Shiva is so compassionate in saving the universe. We'll read about it, or we'll hear about it later on. There is also this very concept of transcendental diplomacy, about which His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj spoke quite a lot. That is, yesterday I believe also this was discussed somewhat, taking a lower or an inferior position to achieve a higher spiritual goal. So the Supreme Lord advocates to the demigods to take an inferior position, to make some kind of a compromise, but not compromising the principles of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes, one has to make little compromise here and there, but never make compromises on the essence, which is what His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj emphasized in his lecture. But the element which appeals to me very much in these verses is the scientific element. And I would like to focus on this somewhat before I come to the third verse. So, as a chemist, who has worked in the industry for some time and also in the university, I am familiar with the scale of experiments that are done. Some experiments are done on micro level, microgram level. These days people talk of nanogram chemistry also, 10 raised to minus 9. Everybody knows about nanogram, nanocar, but I'm talking about nanogram. So some experiments are done at that level also, especially in electronics, they're done at nano level. Then some experiments are done on micro level. Then some experiments are also done on macro level. So we're talking of 1,000th part of a milligram, then we are talking of gram, and we are talking of kilograms. And generally these experiments are done in the laboratory in very, very small vessels. One can do a reaction, make two entities or reactants react and produce a product in a very, very small class, you know, one milliliter reaction vessel, one can do a reaction. Now in the industry, you have giant-sized reactor vessels, isn't it? Giant-sized. And in the laboratory, we may use a magnetic stirrer, a small little magnetic needle which stirs, which churns the reaction medium. Or sometimes an electrical motor with stirrer, you know, which churns. But in the industry, the size of the reaction vessels, the medium, is absolutely mind-boggling to one extent, to some extent. And the stirrers or the churners that are used are also so huge. And they produce not in grams or, you know, 100 grams. They produce in tons. The production is in tons. Tons of material, you know, are produced. Now, all these things which I have discussed appear like very, very teeny, minute when you consider the experiment that was suggested by the Supreme Lord Krishna to the demigods. He is the supreme scientist. I definitely came to the conclusion. I had come to the conclusion earlier also, but again, you know, this was reinforced. So he is the supreme scientist and he orchestrates an experiment on a scale which we cannot even think of or even imagine. Just think. The reaction medium or the reaction vessel is what? It is the ocean of milk. Now, we really don't know the size. How much, you know, what was the volume? We can just speculate, but we'll reach nowhere. Then, what is the churner or the stirrer? That is the Mandar mountain, no? The heaviest of them all. That is the churner. And what is the churning rope about which we are just now reading in this verse? It is Vasuki, the king of serpents. Very, very, very long. Who has length enough to coil around the Mandar mountain, which in itself has got a lot of circumference. So look at the, it is simply, you can't even, it's inconceivable. That's a nice word to use. Really inconceivable. What an experiment. And one may say, what was the need for such an experiment? It's a wonderful experiment that was done. Now, apart from the sheer magnitude and grandeur of this very, very primordial experiment, possibly the first experiment that was done, and first product of chemical technology was done, and it's most amazing. And what is most amazing? The labor force. In industry require labor, labor force, and that's a big problem, managing labor. And the labor force is demigods and demons. They are the labor force. And they are not doing, you know, any electrical stirring. They, you know, manually, they're pulling, you know, two sides of the, you know, Vasuki serpent, two sides of the churning rope. And in an extraordinary cooperative venture. Enemies, you know, who are, you know, who always at loggerheads, who have been always fighting, and we find that in this grand, you know, experiment, the demigods, these who are totally dependent on the Lord, that is why they are engaged in this experiment, and the demons also. So, and what did the Lord do? He is giving to these people a turnkey project. Everything, you know, is standardized. It's not that. Sometimes, you know, you do experiments in the laboratory, and you do experiments also sometimes on a mass scale, on the technological scale. And sometimes the experiments fail. What you do with few milligrams or grams doesn't succeed with tons. Therefore, you require real, you know, hard work to produce on a large scale. You know, a turnkey project, there are people who give that, consultants who do that. They give this turnkey project. So first of all, here, the Lord is giving the demigods and the complete technology, total technology, all the process, all the details, how to set about it. And then he goes one step ahead and also tells them that when you do these things perfectly, what you can expect from that reaction, you know, from that experiment. He says that the very first product is going to be Kalakuta. It's going to be poison. We'll read about it in future, you know, Bhagavatam classes. And not only that, he hints that this experiment will lead to several products, several entities who are going to be very, very attractive. Very, very attractive. And there is a likelihood, he warns the demigods, that, you know, you may develop some kind of a desire or, you know, some kind of a greed for those other products which will come on the way. But he says that don't be attracted to that. Go for the final product, his Amrutam, which alone will save you. All other things, you know, will not save you. They will just be there. So that's the instruction that we get. So we find that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, he is doing so many things, multitasking. He not only just supervise. He could have just said, you know, I will supervise. I will see what you people do, demigods do. But no, he plays an active, pivotal role in everything that is happening in Amrut Manthan. So what is happening before, what is happening during, and what happens after. That includes also the distribution of Amrut. So in every phase, in every step, the Supreme Lord, you know, is taking an active, playing an active role, and in the process, protecting his devotees, the demigods. That's very, very important. He does troubleshooting. This troubleshooting is an important part also of production. Suddenly there is some problem, and, you know, the troubleshooter experts, they are supposed to solve the problem. So the Lord, you know, source of everything. So he solves the problem one after other, one after other. So we have heard before in many classes here about the Amrut Manthan pastime, why it was done, how it was done. But I would still like to repeat some features to give a background to, or to give the perspective to the verse that we are reading today. So first of all, we know how Indra disrespected Durvasa Muni. He took the blessing of the Mahaprasad garland cheaply. His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj spoke about it in detail. And therefore, he was cursed by Durvasa Muni. And what was the result of the curse? Indra and the demigods lost all their material opulence, and actually they became bereft of influence and strength. They became nistaja, in other words. There was nothing that they could talk of. They were totally defeated by the powerful asuras who had the backing of their spiritual master, their guru rather, Shukracharya, and also the prowess of Bali Maharaj, and the demigods were totally devastated in the war. As very aptly described by His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, the demigods became refugees. Maharaj used the word refugees. Refugees in their own domain. And they had to wander here and there. They were helpless. So deprived of their heavenly kingdom, deprived of everything, reduced to a zero, they sought help. From whom? From Lord Brahma. So they approached Lord Brahma and informed him about all the developments that had taken place. And they wanted a solution from Lord Brahma, but Lord Brahma had no solution. So what did Lord Brahma do? What was his solution? Brahma, along with all the demigods, he went to the shore of Ocean of Milk, where he offered heartfelt, fervent prayers to Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. And due to these wonderful, sincere prayers of demigods, Lord Brahma and also Lord Shiva, the Supreme Lord became very, very, you know, he pleased with the prayers. And then it is mentioned that he appeared before the demigods with his bodily effulgence, which was Sahasra Arka Udaya Dyutihi, which was like resembling the simultaneous rising of 1,000 suns. That brilliancy appeared before them. And then, once again, Lord Brahma offered prayers to the Supreme Lord. Nobody, you know, addresses anything to the Supreme Lord without offering prayers. So its prayerful attitude is always a hallmark of a devotee. So Brahma offered, you know, prayers. And briefly, he said, O Lord, you are Ashesha Shakshi. His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj again spoke a lot on this subject. Very briefly, he said that the demigod, Lord Brahma, addressed the Supreme Lord, and he said that you know, you are the knower of everything, you are Ashesha Sakshi, you know everything, what is happening. You are, after all, Paramatma in the heart of all living entities. You know everything. You know why we have come here. You know the reason, and you know why you have taken your shelter. So it's not necessary for us to elaborate, you know, why we have come to you. You know everything. So, O Lord, therefore, you do what you deem fit. You advise us in the way you think you should do. In other words, Lord Brahma is speaking on behalf of the demigods. He's not demanding anything. Again, this was an important topic which His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj talked about. He's not demanding. He's simply, you know, asking. He's simply requesting the Lord to do as he pleases. So what did the Lord advise? As long as you are not flourishing, you should make truce with your enemies. Sandhihi vidhiyatam. Immediately make truce. And because the demons are kalena anugrahita. At this point in time, the demons, you know, are favored by Kala. So you need not struggle and try to win them over in a battle. Just make truce with them. And this is important. For self-interest, one can make peace even with one's enemies. You just follow the Ahimushika Nyaya, the logic of the serpent and the mouse. And you, the first priority, the topmost priority in your life at this stage should be Amruta Utpadane Yatnaha Kriyatam Avilambitam. Avilambitam. Do not delay any further. Immediately make truce with the demons. Go with a peace proposal. Go with a proposal for churning of the milk ocean. And then start this process immediately. So, how should this churning be accomplished? Again, very specific details given. He told the demigod, the Lord told the demigods, cast into the ocean of milk all kinds of vegetables, grass, creepers and drugs. Then with my help, making Mandar mountain the churning rod and Vasuki the rope, churn the milk ocean with undivided attention. It's amazing. The reactants that are used for churning is something which you can't think of. You know, how by casting, you know, some vegetables and other things, grass, finally out of it comes nectar and so many other things that come out. So, anyway, the Lord gives the process, gives the experimental procedure, so to say, how to go about it. And then he specifically warns the demigod. He says that be peaceful and be patient. Both qualities necessary for a devotee to make progress in spiritual life. And not be agitated by anger. Krishna warns us against anger in the Bhagavad Gita. Not be agitated. And then one very, very important instruction. Anumodadvam yad icchanti asuraha. Whatever the demons ask, agree to their proposal. Now, this is something which is amazing. Because normally, nobody, you know, you may agree on 1 point or 2 points or something like that. You know, when you sign a peace treaty, you may have an agenda on which you will agree. And there will be certain points about which you will not agree. This is going on, you know, about Kashmir. So many negotiations, so many things are going on. But finally still, there are certain points of difference. So there never ever will be peace on this score. So like that, the Lord here is advising that you better agree to whatever they ask for. And that is reflected in the future verses which possibly will be discussed tomorrow. So, the demigods repose their complete faith in the words of the Supreme Lord. So, this is a necessary criterion for a devotee to repose faith in the spiritual master and in the words of scriptures and in the Supreme Lord. And they carried out the instructions fully, thoroughly. They made peace with the demons, and it is to the credit of Bali Maharaj that he allowed the peace proposals to, you know, go ahead. He could have said, no, nothing doing. We have won. We have nothing to do with you. But no, he also played his role, and he did not reject the proposal for peace, and he did not reject the proposal for joint venture with the enemy. And then rest of the things are known. The demigods and the demons uprooted the Mandar mountain, the churning rod for the experiment, and they tried to carry it to the ocean of milk. They failed miserably. They were crushed. Some of them were killed under the sheer weight of Mandar mountain made of gold, and everyone became morose. They said, now this experiment is never going to take place. The Mandar mountain is not there. It is supposed to be the churning rod. So we are all under it. So how is it going to succeed? But suddenly the compassionate Lord appeared on the scene, riding on his Garuda. And then with one hand, effortlessly he lifts the Mandar mountain, which combined effort of demigods and, you know, demons did not succeed. The Lord lifts it effortlessly, places it on the Garuda, himself rides on that. And then Garuda transports the Lord to the scene of action where churnings take place. And then he places that Mandar mountain right in the middle of the ocean. Now sometimes, you know, my imagination runs wild. Milk of ocean, such a huge volume. And when such a heavy thing was placed, what must have happened, you know? Did all, you know, the demigods, you know, get completely submerged in the overflow? You know, when you put something heavy, there is an overflow. But apparently that is not described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so it must not have been there. So the reactor vessel is there now, the huge, you know, ocean of milk, and the churning rod was made available by the Lord's mercy. And in the verse we have just now read, it is described that the demigods and demons summoned Vasuki, king of serpents, requesting him to come and promising him to give him a share of the nectar. This is also very interesting. When we want something to be done, you know, especially by our children, we promise them something, some sweetmeat or something like that, some sandesh, so that, you know, they do the job. Like that. Here, Vasuki, he's in a mode of ignorance. We'll come to him a little later. He's in a mode of ignorance, and therefore he needs some inducement. So he's given an inducement. What is the inducement? Inducement is that he should, you know, he will get also a share of the nectar. It's not that we only are going to drink all the nectar. Vasuki, you'll also get some nectar. So please do this job. And then what happens? The personality of Godhead, Ajita, now he, as an incarnation of the Lord, what does he do? He goes and grasps the front portion of the snake, and whatever the leader does, the demigods do. So all the demigods, you know, led by Ajita, they go and catch the front portion of the snake, and they now they are eager to start the process. The churning process should begin any moment, but there is labor problem at this point in time. What is the problem? What is the labor problem? The demons, their attitude, which has been described in detail by Srila Prabhupada. So when Vasuki was coiled around, there were two ends. One end was the head portion, the other end was the tail portion. So the demigods headed by Ajit, they went and grasped the head side of Vasuki, and the demons, they were left with the tail portion. They held that. Now this was infra dig, you know, it was infra dig for the demons. They said, what is this? We are more powerful than the demigods. And, you know, we are asked to hold on to something which is amangala. Na grunime, na grunimo vayam, puccham, ahehe, angam, amangalam. Said, how come, you know, we are, you know, relegated to this inferior position of holding on to the tail side of the snake? We are, you know, very, very important. We are most important people. And then he says here, very beautifully explained, that Swadhyaya Shruta Sampannaha Prakhyata Janma Karma Bhi. We are all famous, we are all experts, and by Janma and Karma, it's almost like Janma Karma Chame Divyam kind of thing. We are, you know, by Janma and by our Karma, we have achieved so much. And how is it that, you know, you are relegating us to this position, you know, which hurts our dignity? You know, you are making us hold to the tail portion. We should be holding on to the head portion of the tower. So this is the sort of gist of the verses that we have just now read. So, and the demons are proclaiming that they are Swadhyaya Shruta Sampanna. That, you know, we are all very well, you know, we are read, we are very well read, and we are experts. And because of that, because of our prestige that we enjoy, we are expert students of Vedic knowledge, and therefore we must be the ones who hold the head portion. Now just see, this is the demoniac attitude. Now Ajita, the incarnation of the Lord, he has, as Prabhupada points out, given an opportunity to the demons to hold the tail side, so that if and when actually the process of churning will start, the Vasuki is not going to remain very quiet. He's peaceful, but in the process of churning, lot of poison is going to be thrown out, and the demons are going to be hurt by that. So therefore, compassionately, the Supreme Lord in his incarnation is holding on to that portion. But what do the demons want? Prabhupada actually has summed it up very nicely, very beautifully. Prabhupada sums it up. He says, Daityas must always do the opposite of demigods. So if the demigods are holding on to the head portion, we want that position. So the demigods should be demoted, we should be promoted. So that is the stand that they take. So Prabhupada also, in his beautiful purport, is describing what is this demoniac attitude. Normally the characteristics of demoniac attitude is that they have ahankara, bala, darpa, kama, krodha. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the characteristics are described. Ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodham cha samshtita mam atma paradeheshu pradvishanta abhyasuyakaha. So the Lord tells Arjuna that bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against real religion. So this enviousness is a characteristic of the demons. So even in any situation, the demons, you know, can become envious. Now here also, because of their enviousness, they are not able to grasp that they are at an advantage because they are holding on to the tail. There is no danger which is likely to come place later on. They are not aware of that. So they think that we want a superior position. And this is something we see, that Prabhupada gives the examples of Ravana and Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, who were ostensibly well read in Vedas. They were, you know, they're well read, Veda Parangata in one sense. But they did not accept the Lord. They were not subservient to the Lord. And as Srila Prabhupada very clearly says here, according to the words of Lord Krishna, even if a godless demon is very well educated, he must be considered a mudha, a naradhama, maya aparata jnana. So spirituality is not connected with intellectual knowledge at all, nowhere connected. So these demons, despite their opulence, material opulence, despite their opulence of material knowledge, they are not surrendered to the Lord, and therefore they are demons. Now we have the example of Ravana again. So we know through the Shastra that in order to reach heaven, you have to perform, you know, so many activities, so many things you have to do. Maybe all karmakanda activities, but you have to do some activities. But Ravana wants to construct a staircase going directly to heaven. So whatever the Shastra says, the first principle the demons follow is to oppose it. So if the Shastra is saying that you follow this to go to heavenly planets, then Ravana says, no, not necessary. I'll reverse all that. No, you just climb this, staircase. That he didn't succeed is another story. So this is how the demoniac mentality works. To quote a personal experience, very many times while coming to the temple, we wait at car bus stop, Ramakrishna Mission bus stop. We wait for a bus there. And many times in the morning, we have a chanting beads in our hands and we are chanting and trying to chant Hare Krishna. And then, this has happened to me many times. Suddenly, a sardari comes. He comes to me very near. He has done it to me several times. And loudly shouts in my ears, Ravan ki jai. Ravan ki jai. And this has not happened once. It has happened several times. Of course, I completely ignore him. I don't want to get into a fight with him. Diplomacy for a higher purpose. So, I just neglect him. Continue on with my chanting. So, this is demoniac mentality. They don't want to have anything to do with God or Krishna. So this is demoniac mentality. So Srila Prabhupada raises a question in his purport and then he answers it himself. He says that if a person is actually educated in Vedic knowledge and is famous otherwise, why should he be called a demon? He asks a question. Why should he be called a demon? The answer is that one may be highly educated, may have been born in an aristocratic family, but if he is godless, has no sense of Krishna consciousness, no obedience to the Supreme Lord, he is a demon. So in other words, Prabhupada very clearly tells us what is a divine, godly quality. Of course, the Lord himself explains in Bhagavad Gita what are demoniac and divine qualities. So this way, we find in the verse we have just now read, the third verse, that the demons are being themselves. They are true to their nature. They are acting according to whatever they are. The way they are acting, everything is expected, nothing unusual. This is how the demons are going to act. And the demigods have been instructed. Bhuyam anumodadvam yad ichchanti asuraha. So whatever the demons ask, agree to that. So what is going to happen? You will hear about it in the next Srimad Bhagavatam class. So as was described by His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, all Krishna's pastimes are suspenseful, full of suspense. So there is suspense, there is excitement to come. So this churning process is very, very common in everyday, in our homes, churning gets done. No? You churn the milk to produce butter. The term churning also used very, very widely in politics, many times in politics. He said that there is political churning, and out of that churning comes a new regime to rule, which again has to undergo churning after some time because of the misdeeds that they do, demoniac things, atheistic activities. So this goes on, churning process will go on. Srimad Bhagavatam speaks of churning of a different kind, which we are reading and which we'll be reading in future chapters. Srimad Bhagavatam also speaks of churning of the thighs of the evil Vena. And out of that churning came out the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, Prithu Maharaj. So that churning is of a different nature, different order altogether. And apart from what happens in our day-to-day lives, that churning is totally different, totally different. And finally, I would like to conclude with, I was just reading those nectar drops, which was just purchased. And in that, there is a reference to churning also. I would conclude with that. So it says that one should, churn Maya to find Krishna. So Maya is very powerful, produces so many obstacles. But through all that, we should churn it and, try to find Krishna by the very sublime process that has been given to us. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Anybody has any questions or any comments? Radha Gopinath Prabhu, Madanlal Gopal Prabhu, Gaur Gopal Prabhu, anybody else like to add anything? Srimad Bhagavat Puranam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.